The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. From the heart of Broadway in historic downtown Cape Girardeau, this is Pro Wrestling Unscripted.
Wednesdays are for pro wrestling, and that of course means another edition of Pro Wrestling Unscripted right here on the Podzilla 1985 network. I am your host for the evening, the five-star man, Asa Gray, and joining me at this time is the Big D, Dalton Anthony.
Yo.
And it has been a week. Like, has anything cool happened in wrestling? A lot has. But we're going to get to that here in just a little bit. We're going to start off the show first by sending well wishes to Triple H. It just came out just a few hours ago that he has underwent surgery for he had a cardiac event, is what they're calling it. And it seems to be some sort of genetic heart thing that seems to have been resolved, and he's expected to make a full recovery, but still, that's, you know, scary and not great. So all of our best to Triple H in his recovery. Hopefully it's quick and thorough and he can get back to doing what he loves to do. And then also we wanted to, of course, talk about the tragedy that happened earlier in the week with Daphne. Yeah. Who unfortunately took her own life. She posted a very concerning video online, and then it was kind of, I was trying to follow it on Twitter as best I could, like hoping for good news, but unfortunately it didn't play out that way. And our thoughts and prayers and everything go to, I don't like that phrase, but I mean, that's really all we can do.
Yeah.
To her family and her friends. And, you know, it was just I talk about this, the unfortunate amount of times that we have to talk about things like this, you know, the one silver lining that I do want to mention is just the sheer number of people who shared, who had stories, and how she was so influential to them, or how she was, you know, uplifting and encouraging is the word I was looking for there, and just the positive impact that she had on so many lives, not just for fans of her, because she had a really cool career and did some really cool things both in WCW and in TNA, but also just professionally for people within pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Even people like Bayley posting photos and stories of her, and even on Monday Night Raw, if you saw Nikki A.S.H. had the DAF tape on her shoulder. So it sucks. It is a tragedy. There's no other way of putting it. And just, you know, to anybody listening who might be struggling with things like that, you know, never be ashamed or embarrassed or feel like you're burdened to reach out to someone that you love. There is someone who will listen to you, who loves you, who will miss you. And, you know, there's a lot of resources. The number has been posted everywhere. There's different organizations that you can, like, send text messages to if you would rather, you know, not actually speak on the phone. But it's a tragedy, and just all we can do is wish the best to her friends and family.
Yeah, and it's always a bummer when we talk about things like this. It's even more of a bummer when it's this kind of situation. And again, this was somebody that had a very, like, trailblazing career when you, like, really look, like, mm-hmm. get down in the weeds in it. She was in WCW. She did TNA. She did a lot in Ring of Honor. Like, she was all over the place in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, like, always fun as a manager. Good wrestler. And, like, also, it's just like you were saying, like, there's not a single problematic story that I have heard, like, ever about her. Like, she just mm-hmm. has always seemed kind of like a good in wrestling. And it's a shame that that's one less we have.
Yeah, because God knows we need as many as we can.
Yeah.
You know, we need as many as we can get. Just a, like I said, a universal force of good, like you said, is just, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So we wanted to mention that at the top of the show, because like there's big stories, but these are obviously the most important stories of the week. But then from there, we are going to do things a little bit differently. Dalton is kicking and screaming and pouting because I'm switching up the format. And he was willing to bet money that we could get through some of these other stories without tangents or side conversations, to which I think honestly, when you say that, it hurts my feelings that you clearly don't know who we are as people.
Oh, I have self-control.
What our dynamic is.
I have self-control, Asa. If I tell myself no major tangents that throw our timing off, I could stick to it.
And I'm saying, I think you are discrediting my disruptive nature, and that when you say things like, oh, I want to do this, do you know what that does to me psychologically of my initial reaction to just be, well, I want to ruin that plan for him?
Yeah, I was so confident, because I'm also looking at the list and there's no William Regal, so I know I'm safe on like just ruining a conversation and adding 20 minutes to it.
Think I'm not going to find a way to put William Regal into one of these stories now. Anyway, to get into it, because this is, see, already, I would count this as a tangent.
Nope, we're explaining format. This is a side, that's important.
This is a side conversation. So, Sunday night? No, Saturday.
Sunday
no,
night.
It was Sunday. Sunday night.
We
was,
had, Sunday Monday was a holiday.
Out. Yeah, that has screwed with me this entire week. I spent all day thinking today was Thursday. It didn't work. Anyway, Sunday night, All Out, and holy crap, what a show. From a pay-per-view standpoint, from a newsworthy standpoint, it was top of the charts in every possible regard. So the big stories, of course, are the three major debuts and signings. I'm not counting Minoru Suzuki as a signing, just because that's kind of a Forbidden Door thing, and he's had his matches tonight, and we don't know, you know, how much more he will be doing with AEW after tonight. So, but we had Ruby Soho, Destination Known, debuting in the women's casino battle royale match. We had Adam Cole, baby, coming out at the end in what was the most perfect segment.
It was
AEW
so good.
Should have aired, and then of course. Bryan Danielson, who I have to make the conscious effort to not say Daniel Bryan. Like, this, I don't know what it is, but this is the hardest one for me.
I counter it. I always say Bryan. I have always said Bryan. Like,
that's how I've typed it.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. But, like, whenever I talk about him, I'm almost exclusively talking like, yeah, because Bryan did this. And it's because I do remember him from indies pre-WWE.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do, too. But yeah. He was in WWE so long.
Yeah,
that, like,
10 plus
Daniel
years.
Bryan is just, that's in my head. It's ingrained in my head. So now to get that fixed.
Yeah. I watched enough Total Divas to hear Brie say it the other way that I'm like, I'm good. I definitely won't mess this up now.
Yeah, thanks, I didn't Total have Divas. That. Advantage? I'm not gonna call that an advantage. I don't have that it working in my brain for me. So, but we're gonna get to those debuts as we get to the part in the show. Pre-show was because there was the shuffling when Adam and I this was so frustrating. So Adam and I did the show last week.
Yeah.
And which again, shout out to Adam for the super last minute. Like, he's someone that I follow on Twitter, and like we follow each other on Twitter. And I see him talk about wrestling and he, you know, knows his shit. And I was like, oh, well, Dalton wasn't going to be on. I wonder if he would be willing to like do, but it was super last minute and he agreed to do it. And I appreciate him. So go give him a follow at A Gumber. No, wait, what is this? I've already. Adam Gumby at Adam Gumby on the Twitter. Follow him. Check out the shows that he's on. Because literally the first time I introduced him, I got his show wrong. I said, I said OCG instead of ECG pod.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a terrible host. Anyway, so we're recording, like right now we're recording. It's before Dynamite has started. We got 10 minutes before Dynamite starts. But we were recording as Dynamite was airing, and we ran down the card, And then we get done recording. I pull up Twitter as I'm waiting for my stuff to render. And sure enough, it's like, oh, so here's the thing. We're moving the Women's Casino Battle Royal to the main card. And Pac versus Andrade is canceled. Or is postponed until Friday night for Rampage. And I told him, I was just like, son of a, this is why we need to find a new night to do this. But, so the new pre-show match was a 10-man tag team. As a 10-man tag team match, as the Best Friends, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Wheeler Yuta teamed up with Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus against the Hardy Family Office, Matt Hardy, Private Party, Isaiah Cassidy, and Mark Quinn, the Hybrid 2, Angelico, and Jack Evans with the Blade at ringside. That was a fun match. Like, it was a cluster, which it's a 10-man tag. There's no way it's not going to be, but all of the pieces involved in that are just so friggin' good. But the big thing, of course, coming out of it is what made me very happy, is that we got the return of the Butcher, who has been out with an injury. And so Andy Williams, the Butcher, is back. I'm stoked. I'm a big fan of the Butcher and the Blade, like, as a team, and like their pairing with the Bunny as well is great. I don't love them with the Hardy Family Office, but yeah, that's a separate thing. Doesn't matter. Irrelevant. I'm just super happy to have Butcher back. Did you watch this, the pre-show?
Yeah, that the chicken spot that ended with Jungle Boy ducking the first attack, and then yes, and then catching a Luchasaurus assisted C4 power slam off the second. That's the best I can say what that's called, because that's not a real wrestling move, by the way. It was real that time, but no, I absolutely loved it. I love all of those guys. I'm still, Wheeler Yuta is a little lost on me still. I think we've had this conversation either in person or on a show where he's just one of those guys where it's like,
it's been in person.
Okay. Like, I like him. He does a good job, but I know it's supposed to be Trent, and I know Trent is still recovering from the injury. It's just a bummer. Mm.
Yeah, and, like, I think that's your thing, is you don't have anything against Wheeler Yuta. You don't think Wheeler Yuta is bad, because Wheeler Yuta is phenomenal. Like, I'm a huge fan of him. I've been a fan of him for a while. But I get what you mean of, like, the Best Friends pairing isn't, like, he's not Trent. And it's, and granted, they're not trying to actually, like, replace him with Trent. He's kind of like the understudy. Yeah. So I think they're doing a good enough job with it, but I do agree that it does feel off without Trent there. First match of the show proper, though, was the TNT Championship match. Eddie Kingston challenging God's favorite champion, the Redeemer, Miro. And hot damn, they started things off correct. I loved this match. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, Asa, you did nothing but complain about the Walter Dragunov match, because of how violent they were, but look at Miro's chest afterwards and how it was like purple and black and bubbling up and just super disgusting. And you know what, hypothetical internet person, let me tell you something. My brain doesn't work, so I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't have a response to that valid criticism, because I loved this match. I loved the whole thing with like Eddie Kingston being like, no, your neck is your weakness, so I'm going to use the spinning back fist. I'm going to use the DDT. I'm going to use the
Saito and
the
all exploders.
That. Yeah, so, but this, everything about this worked. I will say I am going to go to bat for Bryce Remsburg, because one of the big complaints about AEW is that the referees tend to look totally incompetent. That's a valid criticism. But this match, it was specifically Remsburg doing his job correctly that led to the finish of the match. He was replacing the turnbuckle pad that had been torn off. He was out of position. He broke up like the, you know, he was doing what a referee is supposed to do, but Miro used that to his advantage. So I love this match. I'm very, very excited for the inevitable rematch, just because of, you know, the shadiness that did occur. You got to think one's coming somewhere down the line. But yeah, holy damn. This was a great way to start the show.
Allie was with us when we were watching. And this was her first time seeing Miro post WWE. And she was just like, the Redeemer. And I was like, he's God's favorite champion. It's Rusev. I really don't need to explain it. And she was totally bought in. And I love Eddie Kingston so much. The fact that AEW signed him and using him almost perfectly is amazing. He's not like destroying people. He's like he is just a tough son of a bitch that they put in there and they let him just wrestle like that. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Tyler did tell me on Rampage, he said, I need you to explicitly, like, you specifically watch Kingston's promo. So even Tyler, who's never met me in person, knows what my, like, what I like in a promo. Is a good nut comment. Mm-hmm. Also, the speed on Pro Wrestling Tees to already get that shirt made, knowing damn good and well they have, like, 100,000 CM Punk shirts they need to be working on.
No, this one's on black. It's fine. This is on a black t-shirt. It's okay. They got to make something while they're waiting for all those ringer tees to come in.
But yeah, it's one of those that's just like, it's a wrestling shirt that I want, for one, and two, that I'll never be able to wear anywhere.
See, that's like, why I don't want it. That's why I don't like the shirt, is because it's one of those, like, no, I would never wear that in public. And I don't, and it's, you know, it was a one-time line on a, you know, temporary feud. So it's like, those type of shirts, I appreciate, they're just not for me.
Yeah.
I only stay down for my flexible wife after a championship win, or like a successful defense. I don't remember exactly what that line was, but oh my god, the Redeemer Miro is the absolute best. And again, like, it's the entrance, it's the promos, it's the matches, everything about it is just chef's kiss. Second match is Jon Moxley defeated Satoshi Kojima in a singles match. This was another just like two. At first I was kind of questioning like why they would put these matches back to back, just because like they are like, oh, this is just going to be two dudes beating the shit out of each other. But they were different and they were both very good. And I loved this match. And there was one thing that like, it's subtle for pro wrestling, but it was not subtle at all. But the interview or the promo that Moxley cut, where he's like, once that bell rings, I don't respect anybody. You know, he was putting him over in the interview, but he's like, you need to know, once the bell rings, I do not respect you. That match started with the bell ringing, Kojima going for the handshake, and Moxley just like teeing off on him. But then when he won, at the end of the match, he gave him the bow, he showed him the respect. And it was just like, see, it's little things like that, that, like I said, it's not subtle, but for pro wrestling, it kind of is. Or maybe I should say for, like, what we've been conditioned to know about pro wrestling, it is.
It is one of those things that, like, we wouldn't see that kind of storytelling as much on a WWE show. And it's like, I say storytelling, it's just that little nuance of Moxley saying this in a promo, and then it being exactly what happens.
Yeah, and then making a direct reference to that a couple weeks later, or a week later. I don't remember when he cut that promo. So I wanted to ask you, because we were kind of messaging during the night, did you, like, because this felt like a match that was 100% up your alley. Like, did you love this as much as I assumed you did?
The first two matches on this card, I was like, this is going to be great. I'm waiting for QT Marshall and Paul White to bring down my high. But they started with two Dalton matches right away that I was like, yeah, this is exactly where I'm at as a human. And it was awesome because it was two different kinds of brutal, which both beautiful. None of them gratuitous. Like, yeah, Miro's chest was a little scarred, but like it's not like Dragunov and Walter where like one person is a different shape, like they have a two-tone torso. It's a little bit right here. And then Kojima,
you think it was a printing error if you bought that action figure?
Yeah, like it was an AEW figure where the skin tones don't line up perfectly. And like the Kojima Moxley match, it was just New Japan and I loved it. Like, yeah, there was some Americanized stuff in it, but, like, that just very much felt like a New Japan match. There was a part where Kojima hits the lariat with the opposite arm, and that was the reason that Moxley was able to kick out. And it's that, like, it's that little weird shit that I just really love. Like, I love when they get into the weeds on wrestling. And that was one of those matches where they were really digging into it. And then some super cool shit happened.
Kaze ni Narei. Oh my god. I friggin' Minoru Suzuki coming out, murder grandpa face to face.
So again,
with Jon Moxley.
Me and Sadie, big Japan fans. So We saw Minoru Suzuki and lost our shit. Allie, no clue who the fuck this guy was. He walks out and he's just wearing a, like, kind of like a gi and smiling. And she said, I would never fuck with that guy. He did not look scary at this point. Like, he didn't, but yeah. She could tell that, like,
the hair. The hair does plenty.
But he was, like, smiling, like Yano. Like, he was, mm-hmm. He wasn't murdered. No, I mean, well, he was smiling, though. And, like,
you can tell when a sociopath is smiling. Okay, like, let's not, you know, this is a very, very dangerous man. I think we all,
and then they started hitting each other. And I think the best thing Moxley was saying, like, he was just swearing the whole time. He's like, not this motherfucker. Like, he was saying things like that, like, in the ring while he was walking to him. Like, he knew that he is going to get, he's either going to have to mess somebody up or he's about to get messed up. And then they started.
But he wouldn't have it any other way. Oh yeah, the strikes while they were both laughing. Oh my god.
Oh,
it was so good.
I love it. Good. A lot of people say they hate strike exchanges, and I hate it when it's chops. But when it's just they're fucking in their forearms. Oh, Asa, there's nothing better in wrestling than some snug ass forearm exchanges. Oh, me and Roger Mathis talk about it all the time. It's like nothing in wrestling is better than just two really crazy humans just teeing off forearms at each other. It's beautiful because forearms are like, it's not like a punch where we're like, all right, cool, it's worked somehow. Forearms are just kind of in there. They're just, they suck. And you just have these two crazy motherfuckers throwing them. And it was great. And I loved it. And nothing in this show until the last like 5 minutes was cooler than that one moment. There was some cool shit, but that was the coolest shit.
So yeah, that was incredible. Now that of course is going to lead to them having a match tonight, on Dynamite in Moxley's hometown. So that's going to be wild to see. Next up is the singles for the AEW Women's Championship as Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defended against Chris Statlander. And I mentioned last week in our prediction that like, there's no way in hell Statlander's taking the belt off of Baker here. You know, that result wasn't in question to me. And I will give them the highest compliment I can give matches like this, where they made me believe. Like, there were moments in this match that I 100% bought into the fact of like, oh, Statlander, this might be it. Statlander might actually take it here. So I enjoy, again, this was, they went four, I think I even tweeted, I was like, oh, cool. So they're just 4-for-4 on killing it right now. I loved this match. And then I will say too, so I know this is, it's not divisive because I haven't seen anyone say otherwise, but it was weird to me seeing Orange Cassidy be the only one out there in, because they all came out, Wheeler, Cassidy, and Taylor all walked out with Statlander. Mm-hmm. But Cassidy's the only one that went to the ring with her. And he was so much more animated. And then there was that moment where he like, where she was fighting the count out and he just screams in her face, you know, get up, Stat, you gotta get up, and like loses his mind. And on the one hand, I totally get it. He's the guy who doesn't give a shit about himself. So that's why he, you know, is like, yeah, whatever, I don't know. But he's there for his friends 1,000%. And when I read that like interpretation of it, I liked it a lot more. Cause otherwise I was just like, this is not what he would be doing. What is going on here?
Yeah.
But then when someone put it in that context for me, I was like, okay, I am actually a little bit on board with that. I kind of wish we could see more of that being told, because Statlander is another addition to the best friends group that was like, okay, but why? Like, she was brought in to answer to Penelope Ford whenever they were feuding with Sabian and Miro. But it's like, but yeah, with the makeup on the glass pane from the claw machine, that was fantastic visual. But it was just like, okay, but like, where does she fit in, like, with the group? So it's, I would like to see that explored a little bit. Also, I don't know if there was a better spot of the night than Statlander forcing Baker to boop herself.
Oh.
That got me pretty good.
I need you to go back to whenever Suzuki and Moxley were forearming the shit out of each other. Because that was the spot of the night. And you can't tell me otherwise.
I just did tell you otherwise.
But no, that was that match was a lot of fun. I also knew that Baker wasn't gonna lose that match. Or she wasn't going to lose the title, at least. Which is a bummer, because you can usually tell those. Because I love Statlander. Like, I think she's one of my favorite women wrestlers going today. And she has been for a while. And I was just super bummed to see her not walk away with it. She'll eventually get it. I just don't know who Baker's eventually going to lose to. I don't see anybody right now that they have that they're building up star level-wise. Maybe the person that won the Battle Royal that we're getting to in a minute.
I was going to say, I don't think it's going to be her. I don't think it's going to be Soho. But my guess is legitimately Thunder Rosa.
Yeah, we've seen it a lot. And don't get me wrong, I can watch those two wrestle every day. Just those right. two could wrestle each other for a 9-month story, and I think I would love every match.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly
disagree with you there, because I think there are several viable candidates that it could be. I think between Ruby Soho, Thunder Rosa, Ty Conti, I think is another name that they have been kind of slowly letting her work, like dark matches and or AEW dark, like the show, not yeah. dark matches. Boy, they need to. I just realized that name is confusing to me now. You've also got Jamie Hayter, I think, is eligible, even though she's, you know, part of Baker's stable at this point.
If they Batista her, yeah.
Yeah, like you could do that, but and you know, there's granted some of the other ones like Jade Cargill. Like, she just kind of has that look. Like, she could always just become a contender. Same thing with Nyla Rose, even though, you know, she just lost again. But they could always go back and revisit them. But I don't see her losing it anytime soon. I think it'll be, you know, I think she's going to get a solid run. The next match was the steel cage match for the AEW Tag Team Championships as the Lucha Brothers defeated the Young Bucks to become the new AEW Tag Team Champions. I think this might be the best cage match I've ever seen. It is up there, because I was so into so much of this. They have these four, like both teams have incredible chemistry with their tag team partners. Like, these are two of the best gelled tag teams going today. But they also have great chemistry against each other.
Yeah. And I mean, the chemistry they have with each other, like, makes sense. It's two sets of brothers. It's two sets of actual brothers. Like, greatest tag team of all time, arguably, is the Hardy Boys. Actual brothers. Like, the Briscoes. Actual brothers, both sets, Ring of Honor and Old School. Like, there's something to be said with that. And yeah, like, the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks together, you know you're going to get a great match. I am not going to say it's the greatest cage match I've ever seen. One of the most insane cage matches I've ever seen? Yeah. And it's not even close. Like, some of the shit that they were pulling was amazing. It did get to a certain point for me that I was getting slightly fatigued on the craziness of it, because like my brain totally forgot the fucking Nike with the thumbtacks on it. I forgot all about that. Brandon Cutler throws that bag over that 50-foot cage. By the way, that cage was obscenely large.
But part of it was because they mentioned it's not meant to escape.
It's meant to keep people.
Escape is not a way to win the match. It is legitimately supposed to keep the rest of the elite, the super elite, whatever you want to call them, out. Brandon Cutler is away. Callis can't get into the ring. Which in my head I was like, okay, well, we know what's going to happen. Then is someone's going to get into the cage because it's a cage match. And it's like, wow, yeah. So much of what I've learned to expect watching a pay per view match has been dictated for what we've seen on WWE TV for so long that now when they don't do that, it's like, oh, this is refreshing.
Yeah. But so he throws that fucking the bag over and it has the shoe in it. Cause I was like, oh, it's the cold spray, because of course it's the cold spray. And then Sadie was like, I bet it's the Nike I bet it's the thumbtack shoe. And I completely popped for her even saying it. And I was like, I forgot that was a thing. And then we had to explain it to the people that were watching with us. And then they showed it. And it was an amazing match. I'm not going to say it wasn't great. It was one of those at a certain point, I was like, what's going to end it? Like, what's really going to end it? We've had everything at this point. Like, what's going to end this match?
That's a Young Bucks match.
I know, and I'm very aware, and it's Lucha Brothers too. Like, they're not, they're just as guilty. The only thing, and I saw it, and I kind of agree, is Phoenix does the dive on all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Penta just gets right up. And again, I know it's wrestling. They all three ate the dive, but he like sprung right up after it. And they were like celebrating after it a little bit. And I'm like,
they turned friendly fire off.
Okay. Yeah. Like I'll take it. But like, I was the only part of the match that I was like, all right, everything else made sense to me. That was the only thing. Like, so I guess in like a good, it was like a 25 minute cage match. Like 22. Okay, yeah. Like, if there's only one thing that I'm questioning, being like, all right, we could have done a little bit more there, they did great. Because, again, that could have been a time constraint, just being like, hey, you guys need to move along here.
Was it like the midway point whenever the crowd came unglued after Phoenix kicked out? Like, I just remember that being, like, one of the biggest pops in a match.
Yeah.
It was just like, Phoenix hit a kick out after. I don't remember exactly what it was that led to it, but I was just like, oh dang, they're into this, because the crowd all night was amazing, and I want to get to actually that in a second here with the next match. But yeah, I loved this match. I'm super happy for the Lucha Bros. I've been a huge fan of theirs for a while now. I mean, you and I both were. That it was them versus Besties that sold us a ticket to that one Glory Pro show,
Something Wicked.
Like, as soon as they announced that, we were just like, okay, well, we have to go there. Plus, like, what they each individually did with Lucha Underground was super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, congratulations to them. Super, super excited to see, you know, what comes next. The 21-woman Casino Battle Royale for a future AEW Women's World Championship match was... let me see where it was going. Okay. This is where we got the... It's weird to talk about this one, but I will say I am not a fan of the Casino Battle Royale concept.
Neither am I.
I think it's interesting, but the whole five come out at once, but individually, so you don't get that big reaction for a music cue. And then also someone has to go in and immediately do their one thing. And then the next person comes in and immediately has to do their one thing. Like, the Royal Rumble works because it's spread out. Everyone gets a legit, they get a chance to milk the reaction if they choose. They could sprint right in. They can immediately, you know, go on a little bit of a tear, like in a traditional Rumble setup. So I feel like there's got to be a way that they can fine tune that. Maybe, you know, you have to drop the 52 cards in a deck thing or the suits. Someone I saw online mentioned, like, do a roulette wheel. Okay, you're 12 black, 12 red. Yeah. And you know, and that's how, and then you can have the double zeros or the green BA, you know, that's your wild. I like that idea a lot more, but, needless to say, it doesn't matter, irrelevant, because the winner of the match was the Joker. And that is, of course, Ruby Soho. That reaction was, so initially, on top of not liking the concept of the match, really, I was so annoyed. I was so annoyed that they put this right after that cage match. Because I was like, holy shit, the biggest complaint about AEW, or one of the biggest ones, is that you don't treat your women well. You don't give them the proper spotlight. You don't give them the time that they deserve. And now you're making them follow this, like, match of the year candidate with, like, blood and thumbtacks in a cage match, and you're putting them right behind that. Are you kidding me? But I am very, very happy to say the crowd was there for it. They were not tired. They were not, like, they carried through, and, like, even not just for Ruby, but, like, throughout the match itself, like, they were invested. So that made me really, really happy.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, the reaction, them singing along to the Ruby Soho song, just all of that was super heartwarming. I don't know how many times I've watched the gif of once she won, her turning and being like, hi Bryce, and then like hugging him.
Yeah,
just like my heart. I don't know what to just all of just love. That's just love.
Yeah,
I love it so much.
And it's one of those, like, we talked about it in our personal messages today of just like, no, I think these people just really want to like have fun wrestling. And that's a big point of AEW. And it's just like, that's why they're getting so many people. It's because they see people having fun and they're like, wait, this can be fun. We can make money and have fun doing this. Because like Ruby Riott versus Ruby Soho, it was two completely different vibes. Now you could say it's two kind of different characters, but it's same person, same kind of aesthetic. But like, you could tell that she truly was having fun in there. And it was good to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit, I think we're not going to see as much of that going forward, because I do, you know, there's a character she's going to play. Like, yeah, it's a role she's going to play. And that's what she was doing as Ruby Riott in WWE. But I think a lot of that was just genuine emotion because of the reception that she got. Because, like, she did, I don't know if it was part of the media scrum or what, but, like, you know, there's always that doubt of just like, okay, I know there's going to be people excited to see me, but like that ovation would make anybody emotional. Like, it was, you know, you saw the exact same thing with CM Punk when he came back, and he came back in his hometown. Like,
yeah,
who would think that he wouldn't get, you know, that hero's ovation? So I think she was just kind of overwhelmed at, you know, the amount of love that she got from the crowd. And I think that, and which makes for a great moment, and it totally plays into it. So, but the next matchup was Chris Jericho defeating MJF via submission. And this was the match that if Jericho lost, he would no longer be able to wrestle at AEW. And highlight of this match for me personally is MJF's entrance.
Ooh, yeah.
With the Y2J countdown into Jericho's last match. Oh, perfection.
The second I saw the countdown and it was at 10, I was like, this is MJF's entrance. This is MJF's entrance. It has to be MJF's entrance. Like, mm-hmm. There's no, if Chris Jericho came out to that, they did it wrong. There was only one right answer for that. I'm going to say it. This match was incorrect. I think MJF should have won.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that.
Oh, really? I think MJF should have won this one.
I think Chris Jericho has enough to offer in-ring at AEW still that they, if there was any other stipulation to it, then yes, let MJF go 4-0. Let MJF be the boogeyman to Chris Jericho. Like, for whatever reason, Jericho just cannot beat MJF. But I think that there is enough that he can offer. On top of just, like, I really don't want Jericho commentary full-time, as a personal thing. But I'm glad that he didn't retire here. I think, you know, if he had, it would have been fitting. I wouldn't have been upset. Like, this wouldn't have been, you know, I don't think it would have impacted my enjoyment of the pay-per-view. But I don't know if it was, if that would have necessarily been the right call. I will say, though, I thought the finish was incorrect. The Jericho being pinned, but like being kind of late to getting his foot on the rope, to then having a second referee have to come down and be like, no, his foot was on the rope, to the match restart. Like, I would have 100% preferred it to have been, say he was like a little late, but she caught it and she's like, oh no, he foot on the rope. Nope, the match is done. Like, the match is continuing. And let MJF then, you know, instead of it being the referees talking to each other, let MJF go into Aubrey Edwards. Like, you know, have him lose his mind at her before the distraction, and then that's when Jericho comes back through it.
Oh my gosh. I thought,
because that totally, to me, it derailed it. I didn't super,
yeah,
I didn't love the finish there.
There's not a lot of correct ways to do that, and that was not one of them. I did think whenever he pushed Aubrey and she pushed him back that he forgot to bump, because like it was shot really close in on their like chest up, and so he nudged her and then she nudged him, and then it was like a second and a half and then he just shot back, and I was like, and then I saw the roll up and I was like, oh, never mind. He's a professional. Damn it. Cause like, I love moments like that. I think it's hilarious, but yeah, no, it's
Hebner shove and Triple H.
Yeah. I don't even have a thing against Chris Jericho. I think it's just one of those, this would have been a really good match to, let him leave for a while. Let him leave for 5-6 months. and then have him come back. So I'm not saying that he doesn't feel special anymore, but he's done almost everything you can do at AEW at the top level. Now, granted, yeah, he hasn't really gone for the TNT or the tag belts. I mean, he's had a couple matches for the tag belts with like Guevara, but he's been at the top for so long there. Where if you were just like, all right, he's gonna be gone for 6 months, cool. Let him be gone. You MJF can be a shit for 6 months that he retired Jericho. And then, shit, give him the TNT title. And he cuts a promo that's just like, nobody can beat me for this. And then you can do a countdown. And then he can be like, oh, do you really think he was going to come back? And then Judas play. Like, there's a couple different things you could do. And I think taking Jericho off the table for a while would have been a good choice. Because, again, wrestling retirements and matches don't mean shit.
See, and I disagree with you so hard that you're right, they don't, but that's a bad thing. And that is not something that I think they should play into even remotely. I think that if they said that this was Jericho's last match in AEW, they need to stick with it. It's the same thing with like Cody can never challenge for the AEW world title. Like, I don't want them to renege on that. I don't want them to go back on that. And it would be the same thing here. If this was just a Jericho just disappears for a few months before he comes back and wrestles again after saying he would retire, I hate that. I want the stakes to be real, because then it completely undermines, you know, anytime they do it again. So if they go back and say, oh, this is so-and-so's last match, or, oh, if I lose, I have to leave the company, then it's like, all right, well, but you don't, because you've already established that holds no water.
Yeah. But if that's so, wrestling, though. I get what you're saying, but...
But it doesn't have to be. Like, let's work towards making it better.
I mean, WWE tried, and then Ric Flair went to TNA. Like, there's only so much you can do.
But has he wrestled in WWE again?
That's true. He hasn't, but I still...
Shawn Michaels went back on it, but, you know, that's fine.
Mick Foley went back on it multiple fucking times.
Terry Funk has retired 69 times.
Guys,
let's see. Next match. Okay,
we're not doing it. Got it.
No, we're not. CM Punk defeated Darby Allin in his first match in 7 years. I know you hated them. I like the tights. I thought they were a little plain, like just the stars going down the sides. Like if he's gonna change up his looks, I would have kind of dug it to be a little bit more. I don't know, not theatrical, but like that's the word that's popping in my head.
But flamboyant.
No, not even flamboyant isn't the right word. I just, you know, it just felt plain. So, but that said, I prefer long tights. Like that's the look that I like, but that's not what we're going to focus on for this match. What did you think of the match?
Ooh, it was so good. It was exactly what it needed to be. I think it was Darby Allin's best match that he's had at AEW. I think that, and again, like, when you have somebody in there like CM Punk that just understands how this shit's supposed to work, he played his part for Darby perfectly. I think Darby comes looking like a bed of roses out of this. Like, we really got to...
He didn't get hurt at all.
I think he ends up looking better than Punk at the end of this, because he did, like, everything he did made sense. And none of it looked like hokey. Everything looked strong. He was trying to kill CM Punk with everything he was doing. And you could even tell, like, CM Punk would get up on him because he was the bigger guy, which isn't something we're used to seeing with CM Punk. He would put him down and you would see Darby Allin get legitimately frustrated on, shit, I can't let him do that. And there were so many of those, like, I can't let him do that. And then even CM Punk, like, with the lockup arm drag. Like, you could even saw CM Punk being like, all right, cool, that's a thing. Like, it was done so well. It wasn't super fast. He let Darby pick up some speed, and then he shut him down. But then, and vice versa, whenever Darby was on top of him, he would let him get a little bit, but he knew he couldn't let him be CM Punk until you just can't out-see, like, you can't stop him from being CM Punk. It was a beautifully crafted match. I think it was exactly what it needed to be. Just on a standpoint of storytelling, it was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was done so beautifully. And it's exactly what needed to happen. CM Punk should not have lost that match. Who needed a 1-1? But he made Darby look like $1 million. out of that match.
Yeah, absolutely. And it like you said, I thought it was also really, really good. Could have done without the corner, the Irish whip into the corner where Darby like somehow fit through the turnbuckles to take a back shot right to the steel post. But it's Darby Allin, so I mean, you're gonna think he's gonna murder himself three times minimum in a match.
I think I was impressed. He'll watch and be like, all right, cool, that's how it's supposed to look. How can I make it look dangerous? And he's like, oh, instead of just giving my back to the buckle, how about I just like suicide dive into it? That's a good idea, right? Like, no, that's just what that dude does.
Also props to Punk because he ate the shit out of that suicide dive.
Oh God. There's no good way to take that. Logistically. Like, he's dropping a shoulder. I know he only weighs, like, 150, but that's still 150 pounds hurling at your chest at high speed, and he drops his shoulder. Yeah. It's not like he doesn't hug with it because it's his fucking shoulder.
No, he bounces off. He bounces off of everybody that takes it. It looks gross. But no, I think everything you said about the match is accurate. Punk didn't look like he missed a step in his time away. And like you said, Darby doesn't lose anything here. And it's a good win for Punk over kind of like an established now AEW guy who also then gains credibility for having pushed, you know, a legend like Punk to his limits. The next match was Paul White defeating QT Marshall, and it was what it was. It was fine. You know, Adam and I talked about it last week. This is the match that, like, I was like, all right, if we're going to have to put something on the pay-per-view, like, I guess, you know, this is the one that doesn't really fit. It was inoffensive. It was brief. It was as short as it needed to be. I will say that I don't think we need to see Paul White wrestle anymore, just because like the way that he was moving, he looked like he was in pain. Like, you know, he was favoring the one side. His stance was a little bit awkward.
When he hit the ropes.
Yeah.
Like And I'm not shitting on the man.
He's a legend, and I have gone to bat for him multiple times in the ring. You can go back to the earlier episodes in this podcast where you and Shannon and you guys all jump on me because of my fondness for Big Show. But no, it's just like I go back to the Undertaker, the last ride thing of just like you do. There at a certain point, like it's not healthy. Nah. And I get you love it and it's what you want to do more than anything, but like your long-term health has to be taken into account. And it's just like, he wasn't moving like someone who should be doing that more than, you know, what he did here with Marshall. Like, don't prolong this feud. Don't move into a feud with someone else. Like, I like him as an analyst. I like him as a commentator. Let him stick to that. Because again, like not in a negative, like, oh, you suck way, just in a, hey, this doesn't look good for you. Like, I don't want you to get very seriously hurt. Because didn't they even say on commentary he was only like 5 months removed from hip surgery?
Yeah, and you could tell, that's what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way, like it's like Matt Hardy, but somehow more painful. Now, again, he's a lot bigger than Matt Hardy. So it makes sense that that would be an exacerbated like situation. I don't want to see him mess up the work that his like surgeons are doing to like keep him put together. I don't want to see Humpty Dumpty crack is what I'm getting at. It was a fine match. Like, it was exactly what it needed to be. I was afraid
it's like 3 minutes.
I was afraid that they were going to put the women's battle royal between those two matches. That's what I was afraid of, because whatever followed Punk and Darby, because you knew that that was going to be like feature, and then semi-main is going to be a cool down match to get the crowd hot, like re-hot for the main. I was afraid it was going to be that battle royal, because that's something that takes 20-30 minutes that would eat up a lot of time before the main event. This was a lot better choice. It was quick. It was inoffensive. Yeah. It did what it needed to do. But yeah, no, I will be perfectly happy if I don't see him wrestle again, because I'm afraid of a possible injury happening.
Yeah, and that's the last thing in the world that we would want. And then the main event was Kenny Omega defeating Christian Cage to retain the AEW World Championship. So I actually went back and rewatched this match because I remember watching it, and I don't know if it was because like the it was later in the night and I was getting a little tired, but like for whatever reason, this match didn't really hit as much as I thought it would. But having rewatched it, I actually like this match better than their match for the Impact title.
Oh yeah, it was a better match than the Impact title match for sure. A lot of really cool shit that they did. Christian will forever be the most underrated wrestler of all time. You could put every belt on him right now, and he is still the most underrated wrestler of all time. Because
yeah, I was gonna say this really kind of cemented the idea of Christian Cage is the wrestler's wrestler. Like, holy shit, this stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Kenny Omega. I'm not saying that Christian carried this match, because Kenny Omega is one of the all-time greats, and you're not going to tell me otherwise.
Yeah.
But this was I loved this match. Very unfortunate, the table break with the leg catching him in the ribs. Like, that was scary. But outside of that, I loved this match. I thought it was phenomenal. But obviously, the biggest story is Kenny Omega takes the microphone, proceeds to say that there was never a doubt that he would beat Christian, because the only people who could take this belt off of him weren't here, are already retired, or were dead. Lights cut. You know, it's all about the boom. Adam Cole comes out, face to face with the Elite, looks him in the eye, says, "You think I forgot what you did to me?" And then proceeds to like hug him. Oh, it's the big double cross. And I didn't notice this the first time, because I've watched this that whole segment like 10 times at this point. But I didn't notice it the first time. Adam Cole, when he came out through the heel tunnel.
Oh,
so that was when I noticed that, I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. We should have known. So story time with Adam Cole, baby. He gets the no chance in hell line in. And then Bryan Danielson makes his way out to the remixed trap version with a Flight of the Valkyries sample, because it turns out Europe hates the Final Countdown so much that they wanted $50,000 per use to license that song. So
Europe are dicks.
So they got original music for Danielson. He comes out, he clears the ring with Christian and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. And so Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson, son of a bitch. Like, this is the most I've had trouble with it, is on air. Like, saying it and typing it and everything, I've been really good. It's just now that people are listening is where I'm struggling.
This is why WWE needs to stop doing public domain music. Because again, like, don't get me wrong.
No, this is exactly why they need to continue doing public domain music.
Well, no, because here's the counterpoint. Like, the Final Countdown plays, that crowd will know that it's Bryan Danielson. That crowd will know. There was a solid chance there is a percentage of people watching that pay-per-view at home and be like, why the fuck is Europe playing? Because it's been 10 plus years since he's come out to that. And again, we know who Bryan Danielson was pre-WWE. This is a man for the last 10 years has been a WWE guy. And I get what you were thinking. I totally get what you were thinking.
No, you don't.
All right, what are you going to say?
What they're going to think isn't, why is Europe playing? They're thinking, well, who is this?
Oh, well, yeah. But like,
in the wrestling context, if music plays, that means someone is on their way out. If it's unfamiliar music, well, who is this? And then you have Bryan Danielson walk out, be like, holy shit, that's awesome. This song is awesome. He's awesome. And now he's here.
Okay. But whenever it was Fly to the Valkyries, like, because the heavy bass drop didn't happen right away. It very much did start with
the theme.
It was the theme that starts the song. And again, what for the last 10 years were we like fucking...
The opening of the song, yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what WWE did. The only difference of it, instead of going into the heavy guitar riff, it went into something way more baller. I didn't think you could beat the WWE version. You did by a fucking country mile. I love it.
It's on Spotify, by the way.
I've listened to it. It's great. I was on the YouTube, I listened to it because I don't have Spotify on this computer because for some reason... MacBooks and Spotify don't get along super well.
Yeah, because they don't want you to use good apps. I don't know if you noticed it, but in the theme, like, there's voices in the background. It's like, what are they saying? Like, this sounds weird. It's the "you're gonna get your fucking head kicked in" chant, but they edit out the bad word.
So
like, if you go back and listen to it, and in the background you hear "you're gonna get your head kicked in," and it's just like, oh, it's so good. So the obviously two huge signings. I would be greatly, I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yums. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but I will say, and let me double check just so I'm 100% sure. There is a very, very big downside to this. Yep. There it is. It is Wednesday. I'm on my YouTube. I'm on my subscriptions. And there is no new Departee on Up, Up, Down, Down. So I want to give a shout out to them, to Up, Up, Down, Down, and Austin Creed, Breeze, Swiss, and Chugs. Because over the last year of them playing Uno and doing other stuff, like, they created something really, really special. And I'm legitimately sad that it's going to be, if it's not altogether gone, it's going to be different without Cole. So, that is the one dark cloud over this otherwise amazing, like, this is super cool. I'm super excited. I can't wait to see what comes out of it. But yeah, these are huge acquisitions. Both of them in the media scrums were like, no, it's, you know, they both had good relationships with Vince. They both, you know, Danielson said, like, no, they made me a very generous offer. They were going to let me go other places. They were basically going to give him everything he wanted, but he still just couldn't resist coming to AEW. And I think that is a bigger, red flag to things at WWE than the CM Punk stuff, than the Malakai Black stuff. You know, of, oh, this is a mismanaged, no one's listening to the audience or to each other. Like, I think the fact is, like, no, someone who was treated incredibly well and who was very happy by all accounts, still, like, AEW was still so cool that he had to go there.
Yeah.
And, like, that's crazy.
And, like, man, it's not the risk that it was. If you go back...
Oh, yeah, no, it's established. And he's even said that. Like, he even said, like, no, this isn't me coming to establish AEW. AEW has been established. Now I'm coming to be a part of it.
Yeah, because, like, if you go back and watch Talking Shop of Mania 1, man, if I thought we would get insight from Talking Shop of Mania 1, and you watch, like, the Boner Yard match, and they do that whole bit in the middle of it with, like, the Young Bucks and be like, oh, yeah, we'll sign up for All Elite, and be like, no, we're going to, like, fucking Marks. Like, it's because they didn't know. And, like, how many times in wrestling, like, a couple of them even said, like, oh, we have a money guy, like, it's going to be great, it's going to be great, and then nothing happens. Like, I don't blame people early for not doing it. Now, it's a viable place to go work, make money, and get to do what you want, for better or for worse. Like, I'm not saying that everything that they're going to do is going to be golden, but, like, man, whenever you let these wrestlers be themselves and wrestle the way that they know how, it's amazing what you'll get. You made a face in the middle of it.
Yeah. Breaking news. Lee Moriarty is All Elite.
Oh, he signed?
Yeah.
Hey!
He got offered a contract. Tony Khan offered him a contract it looks like before Dynamite started.
Yay, that's good.
So that's super cool. That makes me happy. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't trying to interrupt you there.
No, you're good.
I saw that because I was like, oh, I closed out of my Wikipedia tab because we were done with that one, and it immediately brought up Twitter. And that was the first thing on my timeline. So I was like, oh, super. So that's awesome. Overall, like I said, I loved this show top to bottom. It was newsworthy. It was the matches were all fantastic. You know, even the one match that we didn't love was not there. Like it served its purpose. It did what it needed to do. And then, so I'm also going to go ahead and just say called it, because look at how long we've been recording.
Oh yeah, I know.
We're right at an hour. So
you want to call it here? You want to talk about talk about the last thing, and we'll call it here.
Yeah, I want to run through the the rest of these real quick, just because, like I said, we can get through them pretty quick. I'm gonna save the Owens one for last because that's the one we'll actually talk about.
Yeah.
The PWI top 10 was the PWI 500 is out, but the top 10 specifically is, I think, probably the most noteworthy part of it. There's a lot of familiar names on the list, which was really, really cool to see. But the top 10 for this year was number 10, Rich Swann. Awesome. Number 9, Shingo Takagi. Number 8, Finn Balor. Number 7, Will Ospreay. Number 6, Jon Moxley. Number 5, Kota Ibushi. Number 4, Drew McIntyre. Number 3, Bobby Lashley. Number 2, Roman Reigns. And number 1 is Kenny Omega. This all seems like that sounds right because of the way that the PWI, because it is a kayfabe quote unquote list. You know, the bigger the championship win, the more, you know, the better reign, that is a factor. And knowing that, like, how can you deny Kenny Omega at number one? He won the world title for 3 major companies and had incredible matches for all 3 of those companies. So it's like that one's kind of a given.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns, same thing, has been champion since last year, has run through a bunch of challengers, has had really, really good matches in the process of doing it. Same thing with Bobby Lashley. You know, the only person who's really beaten him since he won the title was Xavier Woods. So otherwise he's undefeated. Well, he hasn't been pinned. He's lost like tag matches, but that doesn't really count. Drew was booked like a unstoppable warrior until Lashley took the belt from him. So, yeah, it's cool. It's a good list. The PWI is always fun. I don't think anyone takes it like super seriously, but, and if you do take it seriously and you're like, oh, good, you're on the list. Oh, who cares? Like, who peed in your Cheerios?
Yeah.
Shut up. Let people have fun.
Again, if you think that, like, if I ever make it into the I won't, but if I ever make it in the PWI top 500, if you don't think I'm tattooing that number on me somewhere, if you think that that's something that won't happen, not if I make it multiple years, I won't do it every time. I will do it the first time. Even if I am number 500 or 499, I'm upset that Danhausen didn't get number one, but it's...
Oh, yeah, no, PWI is cursed.
Yeah, they're the end. They're SOL'd.
That's bad. Where did the rest... Okay, so PWI happened. We did get new footage for the AEW game. This time it was Jungle Boy. It's still very, very early in development, you can tell. Excuse me. But I liked what I saw. I like the, you know, they really got the acrobatics down. I don't know if you watched any of the footage, but, like, he did a lot of his...
Yeah, no, I
did. Second rope. Yeah, so you saw that athleticism on display for the game. And... Again, it's early build, but like and I know they're not going for that hyper realism, but there are things that I'm hoping to see, like, you know, whenever he had Darby in the snare trap and Darby was still just neutral face, like it's stuff like that that I'm kind of hoping maybe gets added in or fine tuned, just as a little bit of a, you know, extra degree of realism. I don't need the Sim WWE style 2K game. I do am hoping though for, you know, just a little bit more.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Here Comes the Pain, and that's not an insult.
No, not at all.
If there was one game that you
told... I agree it's not an insult. I wasn't saying it doesn't look like Here Comes the Pain, because I could see that being taken either way.
It looks a lot like that game, and that was one of the greatest wrestling games of all time. And if it plays like Here Comes the Pain, AEW's video games are already going to be better than WWE's. And this is a person that really does enjoy the 2K series. If this game plays like Here Comes the Pain and it looks cool, not saying it has to look super realistic, but if it looks cool, yeah, no, I'm going to be a big AEW Games fan.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. I like how they're doing these two, like, one person at a time. It'll be neat. We have news that The Miz is going to be on the new season of Dancing with the Stars. That's cool. He'll definitely bring an element of entertainment to that. Also, I feel like he's going to do better than people would expect.
His footwork's going to be good, Asa. His footwork's going to be really good.
Yeah, so I feel like that's going to be solid. We got an announcement that Netflix is releasing WWE Escape the Undertaker, an interactive Halloween special starring The Undertaker and The New Day, and that is releasing on October 5th. The New Day are locked in The Undertaker's creepy mansion, and they have to go through these different games and challenges that The Undertaker is putting them through. So, I'm gonna do it.
I'm here for it.
Probably multiple times. So, but that sounds fun. Ron Funches is going to make his GCW debut against Tony Deppen after they had a physical exchange over the weekend. He put out, I gotta find it because it's too perfect. But they have been feuding on Twitter for a while. Also, the name of the show that they're going to be on, this is happening in LA, is called Highest in the Room.
Yep.
So that is just incredibly on brand for him. Okay, I can't find it because he tweets a lot, but he tweeted something along like, if you want to see a wrestling show featuring Minoru Suzuki, John Gresham, Too Cold Scorpio, and Ron Funches, boy, do I have a show for you.
See, I'm going to suggest you buy that pay-per-view, Asa, because like GCW shows are super cheap. They're like 15 bucks. Yeah, they are cheap.
I might.
Because like I'll buy GCW shows every once in a while. Because like they're like between 13 and 15 bucks. And like there's a death match. There's always a death match. Sometimes multiple. But there's a lot of really cool shit in between. So like,
yeah. Oh no, like I'm you're making that sound like I don't like GCW. That's not the case at all. It's just I typically don't buy, I don't have a ton of time to like sit down and watch pay-per-views that aren't, you know, from the big companies, which sounds terrible, but that's just my schedule. And then the last story of the week is Kevin Owens' contract is expiring sooner than what was originally thought. Fightful Select broke this story earlier today. Not earlier today.
Like yesterday, wasn't it?
Yesterday, yeah. Time has no meaning anymore. But yeah, Fightful Select broke this story. It has since been aggregated, so I'm not going to read directly from it, but his contract is actually ending in January of this coming year, so this coming January 22. He had originally signed a 5-year deal that would have put his contract ending sometime in the back end of 23. But now it's coming up quicker than originally thought. Also, it's very much worth noting that two things. One, Fightful never said anything about Sami Zayn, because I've seen that post going around a couple times. So if Sami Zayn's contract, when that ends, I don't know. But Fightful never claimed that it ended a specific time. And two, this isn't a situation like Adam Cole or Malakai Black's non-compete clause. They were aware. They knew this was happening. Like, they've known for a couple months now. It's just now getting out. So someone's dropping the ball. It was just we thought it was supposed to be that here, but it's actually here.
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of, I know we like to dunk on WWE when we can, but we also need to be fair and let, you know, kind of squash anything that might come up from there. So he's playing this perfectly. Like, if he's trying to get money from the Fed, like, he's doing it perfectly.
The Postal Service?
He tweeted the coordinates to Mount Rushmore and then deleted it, which was, that was a stable with him and Cole and the Bucks in PWG. Someone pointed out that the Bucks Twitter location at some point was there, and Kevin Owens was almost there, So, and you know, they love to just, you know, fucking work people. Like, yeah. They love to, you know, just sprinkle those little breadcrumbs and get the internet all in a tizzy.
And, like, what's WWE, like, in, like, again, this is talking, like, and this is me dunking on WWE. What are they gonna do? Get mad? Yes. Please get mad at one of your better superstars for making Twitter jokes, knowing damn good and well that contract lapses in January. Which means if I think the contract lapse means there's usually not a compete clause, knowing damn good and well that next day he'll sign with his buddies. Like, WWE's kind of in a losing situation where they're like, Vince Owens is tweeting things and he's like, okay, should we tell him no? He's like, no, we should probably try to keep him as happy as possible. We should really try to make sure this one stays as happy as possible, because they're starting to run out of those ones. They're running out of those ones real quick, and by those ones I mean stars. There's some people you're not worried about, like, you don't have to be worried about, but, like, they're all aging. And, like, yeah, not everybody can be Goldberg. Like, there, you have to have some younger talent, and they don't have it. They lost two really big names, and then a woman that could have been a lot for them in the course of a week. Like, this is rough. I'm not one of those people saying it's the end of WWE. It's a billion-dollar company. But, like,
those people are dumb.
Yeah, like, there's nobody's against the... Nobody's backs are against the wall, nothing like that. But, like, if it was a fight, if it was an actual fight, the person you didn't expect to, like, tie their shoes a little bit tighter for the fight just laced them up pretty goddamn tight, and I think a slugfest is about to start. And I'm not saying on AEW, although I think that's going to happen too, but, like, WWE needs to start seriously looking at what they're doing and what they need to do to be better, which is good. I am fucking for it. Two things will happen. Either I will keep watching AEW because they're doing awesome shit, and WWE is going to drop the ball, and I'll still have AEW doing cool shit, which hits for me. Or, second option, WWE gets better. I hope the second one, because I would like cool shit every day of the week.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, I would love in 4 months' time, four to six months' time, if there's another war about to start, I would love to go on this show and be like, Asa, there's too much cool shit, I can't keep up.
Yeah, no, the embarrassment of riches is a very obtainable dream here. We'll just have to see how that plays out. But that's it. That's the news of the week. Obviously, is the Kevin Owens stuff will... I'm sure that the speculation and everything will heat up as the year comes to a close and as we get into January. I don't know when his deal... I don't think we have the exact date yet. That will probably come. But the idea that it is in my head is it's just like... He could end up being a surprise at the Royal Rumble. Because that's usually in the back half of January, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, he could just be, like, it could be a thing of just, like, yeah, we don't have word yet. We don't know what's going to happen. And, okay, is he going to be on Dynamite? Or is he going to pop up at the Royal Rumble? Like, this could be a fun way of, you know, that would be hype. That would be exciting. Because that's the best part, is not knowing what's going to happen. The surprises that wrestling can give you. So... but that's going to do it for us this week, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you thought of All Out. What was your favorite match? What was your favorite surprise? What was your favorite moment? Let us know. Hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, wherever you want to, you can. Of course, you can check out, if you want some Dalton Anthony merch, go to prowrestlingtees.com/Dalton Anthony. Get yourself a t-shirt. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at the 5-star man with the number 5. You can follow me on Twitch. I haven't been doing much with it because of the whole hate raid situation and Twitch really dropping the ball. But yeah, that's a thing. And then for sure want to mention, well, first off, I'm going to be in Jeffersonville, Indiana this Sunday for WrestleMax STL at the arena in Jeffersonville, Indiana for episode 5. of WrestleMax, and that's going to be a killer show. Very, very excited. But also, you can still get tickets at capewrestling.com for the Ashley McClure Memorial. That is Saturday, September 25th. All of the proceeds go to St. Jude. It's an amazing cause. This is the best show that I get to be a part of as far as CCW. It's the most important thing that I've done with pro wrestling by a wide margin. And I am very, very excited that this is coming back and we get to do it again. This time it's in Charleston, so we'll have a bigger area. We'll have a bigger venue, more seats available. So please, please come fill those. Help us raise some money for a really, really great cause. But yeah, that's going to do it. Everybody, have a great week. We will see you next time. Stay safe, stay healthy, get vaccinated. We love you very much. We appreciate you. Have a wonderful week.